What's going on, people? Thank you for tuning in, and happy Thanksgiving, a special Turkey Day edition of the MMA Podcast. It is November 23rd, 2016, about to be the 24th, about to be Thanksgiving. We got a ton of MMA to break down. Two UFC cards last weekend, one in Belfast and one in Brazil. Going to break them both down, along with Bellator 165, a potential fight of the year candidate with Michael Chandler and Benson Henderson. Going to talk all that. Got a UFC card coming up this weekend, and a week full of news highlighted by Khabib Nurmagomedov challenging Conor McGregor to a fight, maybe accepting a fight against Tony Ferguson early next year. We'll talk about it all. Thanks for tuning in. Let's do it.
Listening to the MMA Podcast.
That's right, Lenny Hart. It is the MMA Podcast, and thank you for tuning in. Like I said, TMP 190. We're 10 episodes away from the big 200th episode. We'll try and maybe have a few guests on for that. Who knows? Try and have more guests on in the upcoming episodes. We try to schedule some here and there. A lot of times they fall through, but you know who never falls through? You know who's always there? Well, whether it's cold, it's hot, it's snowing, even though it never snows in Palm Desert, it's P Money. He's on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. What's going on, dude?
Oh, Big Jake, we are just maxing and relaxing. It is a wonderful Wednesday out here in SoCal. You know, the deserts, man, we got hot summers and cold winters. All relative terms, though. It's probably in the low 70s here, maybe high 60s. Beautiful affair, prepping for Thanksgiving and prepping to break down last weekend's action and looking forward to this weekend's action with you.
And before we get into the MMA stuff, I've got to ask, because it is a special Thanksgiving edition of the show. Thanksgiving, more specifically, side dishes. If you had to pick one side dish, you only can have that side dish the rest of your life. What is the side dish you're going to? What's your go-to Thanksgiving side dish?
Oh man. Well,
you got your stuffing, you got your sweet potato casserole, you got your mashed potatoes. Some like their potatoes scalloped. Some like it au gratin.
Au gratin.
You got your mac and cheese. You got some just like rolls. They like the simplicity of a King's Hawaiian roll, maybe. We got a lot of.
We gotta have a good roll, bro.
And I will include, so you know, I mean, apple pie, pumpkin pie. You got a lot of choices here.
Well, I don't think we can really include those as size, though. I mean, apple pie and pumpkin. I mean,
that's fair.
You know what, though? For me, number one side is cornbread, man. I got to have me some cornbread. Good ass butter on top.
Yeah.
Cut it in the middle. You got to cut that. You got to cut it open. Slab that butter in the middle. And, hot butter cornbread, man. That is the side, at least for me, for Thanksgiving. What do you typically, what's the one, if you're so limited for the rest of your life?
Man, as much as I hate to leave out stuffing, which I love me a little bit of stuffing with my turkey, I got to go mac and cheese, man. I just, you know, ever since I was a little ass kid, that has been the number one side. You know, where's the mac and cheese at? But I'm going old school with the old, not the box fucking shit, actual macaroni and cheese. If it comes out of a box, it's not macaroni and cheese. It's like those plastic ass shells and this like metallic yellow goo that comes out of a fucking, like, little silver package. That's not macaroni and cheese. I'm talking actual, like, from scratch macaroni, like, actual cheese, like, you're fucking making shit, like, the homemade real shit with, like, breadcrumbs on top. Like, that's the real stuff, not if it comes out of a fucking box. Are you kidding me? But that's a whole nother topic we could dive into. Let's get to the MMA, which, dude, it was an awesome weekend. I guess we'll start with the afternoon card, but it was really crazy as the night went on. I think it was around 11 p.m., and you had the main event of the Bellator card going on. You had Benson against Chandler. You had the main event of the Bader card, Bader versus Lil Nog, and the main event of Kovalev Ward going on all at the same time. So if you had a bunch of screens, you were good. But if you were limited and had to choose, like me, you had to make some rough decisions, which we will talk about later. But like I said, let's start with the afternoon card, UFC Fight Night 99 in Belfast. As far as the prelims, kind of all three cards, both the UFC cards and the Bellator card, the prelims went as we imagined. We didn't see many upsets there. Kevin Lee with a nice second round rear naked choke. Kyoji Horiguchi with an impressive one-sided decision against Ali Bagatinov, both of whom are one of the eight people that Demetrius Johnson has beaten on his current championship run. Lobov defeating Taruto Ishihara, pretty one-sided there. Volkov and Stevie Ray winning split decisions over Tim Johnson and Ross Pearson. Any fights stand out to you? We had Tough 17 alum Zach Cummings defeating Alexander Yakolev via straight armbar in the second round.
Yeah, you know, I actually thought that performance in particular was pretty solid there. As you mentioned, really the only upset that I can recall, I mean, Artem Lobov was actually a decent underdog against Taruto Ishihara there.
Was he?
But really, shockingly. I guess not shockingly. We've all seen Artem Lobov fight before. So he came through there. Other than that, though, as you mentioned, pretty much everything, as predicted. Marion Renault, solid TKO over Milana Dudieva, third round late TKO. Good performance there. Some good scraps all the way around. Alexander Volkov, I thought, he was coming over from Bellator, doing the reverse jump, as it were. Had a good showing. The fight with Tim Johnson, normally the three round 15 minute heavyweight affairs, they can be a little more slow and grueling. This one, they actually had some decent action. They were winging them things just about the whole time. There was a good amount of cage work there, but they're still putting hands on each other, and good heavyweight scrap there.
And that brings us to the main event, a middleweight rematch between Gegard Mousasi and Uriah Hall. The two met actually just about a year and a month ago back in Japan. Uriah Hall losing the fight early in the second round, lands a jumping, and I'm taking this straight from Wikipedia, a jumping, spinning back kick, flying knee, and punches. Which I think I heard Chad Dundas say it, which sounds more like a move out of the handbook of Mortal Kombat than like an actual MMA move. Jumping, spinning back kick, flying knee, and punches was how it ended back September 27th last year in the Saitama Super Arena. Since then, you kind of would have expected Hall to keep going up. Mousasi slipping a little bit. Maybe he falls a little bit. Since then, the loser, Gegard, has done nothing but win, and Uriah Hall has done nothing but lose. After beating Gegard, Hall losing fights to Robert Whittaker and Derek Brunson, who are actually fighting each other this Sunday. We'll be talking about that card a little later. And then losing to Gegard. Gegard now on a 4-fight winning streak after getting a decision against Talis Laetes and finishes over Thiago Santos, Vitor Belfort at UFC 204, and now Uriah Hall avenging that loss. Let's, I guess, talk about the fire. Is there really much to talk about the fight? I mean, it went almost as everyone expected. He was a huge favorite. And it's not really a knock against Uriah Hall. It's more just Gegard is a master at just keeping distance and, you know, striking and just being so efficient and so technical. The guy's a master, and Hall, as much promise as he still has, I mean, you know, he's young, but he's shown some mental slip-ups in the past, and I don't know, things not going the way he has wanted them to since beating Gegard last year. What did you think of the fight itself before, I guess, we talk about what's next for either guy?
Well, I thought this was a peculiar fight just in the way that this is exactly, really, the first fight seemed to start out very much the same way. Gegard dominating every aspect of the fight, gets caught with some freakish knockout in the second round. This one was, again, Gegard from start to finish. This time it didn't even get out of the first round. It was just such a peculiar fight. I could not understand. I could have sworn Uriah Hall had some sort of semblance of ground proficiency, but in this fight, it was like as soon as Gegard got him down, it's just he didn't know what to do. He had his legs. He was just laying in this fucked up position. Didn't really look like he was trying to fight out of it whatsoever. It was really just a performance where Uriah Hall just came out, looked like he really just rolled over for Gegard. I mean, I don't know. It was complete dominance for Mousasi from start to finish. You know, he showcased some good hands and jab that just popped Uriah Hall's head back. And, you know, really executed his game plan to perfection. He navigated the distance perfectly, had the best of the striking, and got the takedown, got the ground and pound, got the finish. It was almost odd to me. I don't know. This whole series between the both of them, both fights have just left a weird figurative taste in my mouth, if you will. I really don't know what that is. Did you get any of that, Jake, with this one?
What? I don't know. I mean, I'm in a way, I mean, I felt the exact opposite. I felt, you know, as much as I'm a Uriah Hall fan and I want to see him do well, I felt, I guess, weirder after the first fight because I was like, oh, wow, that was a fight that, looking at the matchup, I think at least 8 times out of 10, Gegard wins, but he got caught. And I don't know, I didn't feel weird because I was more happy for Hall, and I was, you know, I was thrilled seeing him get such a big win. But in the lead up to it, you know, I was kind of a little bit bummed out because it's like, man, this is, you know, if things go the way I expect them to, and they did, this is really going to take a lot of steam out of the Uriah Hall train, because that win over Gegard is, you know, kind of nullified now.
Yeah, true enough. I mean, it's not one that really people are going to be clamoring for the rubber match for either. Yeah, it was an interesting main event. I mean, good to see Mousasi get that momentum back, get an L back, and you know, keep doing his thing. I mean, who knows? Maybe 2017 could be the year we see the Dreamcatcher fighting for a UFC title.
Indeed, yeah, that would be crazy. And now the middleweights are kind of in a weird spot because you have Yoel, who it looks like he is going to fight Michael Bisping early next year. maybe UFC 208 or 209. We'll see Bisping versus Yoel. I'm assuming we're still gonna get Rockhold Jacare, and that's just gonna be rescheduled for sometime early 2017. So whoever wins that fight will be next in line, obviously. After that, I guess Gegard seems to be next in line. Maybe you pair him up with Chris Weidman. I don't know how long it's gonna take, you know, after Yoel Romero turned his head into a fucking sprinkler. But, yeah, that, I hope he takes a lot of time off just because of the concussive blow that Weidman took there. I mean, honestly, taking a year off wouldn't be the, dumbest thing ever. So I don't know who you would pair Gegard up against next. Weidman, I guess, makes the most sense, but if he can't step in, I'm looking now, your middleweight rankings, you have Bisping the champ, Yoel 1, Rockhold and Souza 2 and 3, as it should be, Weidman 4, Gegard 5, Anderson Silva 6, which I think Tim Kennedy just called out Silva to, fight him after, Rashad Evans pulled out again. They were gonna fight at 205, then Kennedy Evans was rescheduled for UFC 206, and again, Evans failed his medical for an undisclosed reason, which I'm sure we'll find out soon. So Evans pulled out again, and Kennedy is challenging Anderson Silva to fight him, which would be a fun fight, but, I don't really expect that fight to be made. Silva knows he's, worth a lot of money still. You know, having that, championship record does a lot for him. You know, he's basically the Michael Jordan of the sport when Jordan was starting to get older and wasn't the best in the league anymore, but was still the greatest of all time. It's a weird spot Silva's in now. This is like Silva in the middleweights now is like when Jordan played with the Wizards. Like, he's the greatest of all time, but now he's old and getting beaten by people. Ugh, I don't know. Do you feel the same about Silva?
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I mean, especially the back-to-back Weidman losses, especially the second one with the leg break. I mean, yeah, Jordan never had to overcome anything like that. Jordan had the flu game, which, you know, was one night. He still played fantastic ball and then had a career of dominance after that, and that was his legacy. Anderson Silva, yeah, I certainly feel, I mean, there was a time where nobody on the planet would bet against Anderson Silva, regardless of who he was fighting. And, I mean, heck, when Anderson Silva versus Michael Bisping came about, was finally made, on this very show, I was saying, man, Michael Bisping has a shot in this one. He actually won that fight. So, yeah, I am
bizarre
with
fight
you.
That was, too.
Well, no, yeah, that was
the most bizarre fight ever. Like, honestly, that's the most bizarre fight in that the UFC has done post, like, you know, the freak shows of UFC 1 through 5. But that was, like, so bizarre.
Yeah, that was a Twilight Zone kind of feel for that one.
Yeah.
That's a very, very apt analogy, I feel. Silva, I mean, after that injury, you're going to lose a step. It just doesn't matter who you are. And the fact that he's probably still better than 95% or 99.9% of all fighters out there. But
he could steal a win against any middleweight still.
Easily. Very easily. He beats most middleweights still.
I think his spot at sixth is very appropriate currently. I think that's where he should be.
I mean, I think you could even make the argument he's still top five. I mean,
yeah, maybe.
There's still to this day not a ton of guys I picked to beat Anderson Silva.
No, and yeah, if there's one metric I could use, it's, you know, most title defenses ever, and, you know, no one else has 10. I believe you have Hughes and Tito at 5. Rousey at 6, And who's at seven? Aldo, yeah. Rousey had six. Aldo had seven. Jones and Mighty Mouse have eight. GSP had nine. And Anderson has 10. So Mighty Mouse in a couple weeks here is going to be, you know, if he beats the winner of Tough, who there was a rumor it's going to be Tim Elliott, I guess someone at Comcast like wrote in that the name of the event is Johnson versus Elliott. So maybe they messed up and Tim Elliott won Tough. And I hope I didn't just spoil Tough for anybody listening. But yeah, that's the rumor. I'm not saying it's definitely true, but it's a rumor. And yeah, that would put Mighty Mouse at nine, which you would think, you know, he's in 2017. If he doesn't move up, he's going to pretty easily tie and beat Silva's record. If he hits 11, do you say Mighty Mouse is the greatest of all time? I do. I say if Demetrius Johnson defends that flyweight title 11 times, I'm calling Demetrius Johnson the greatest fighter of all time.
Wow, that is very bold. I mean,
he's at eight now, so three more.
He would really have a case. Let's take a look at what he did to Henry Cejudo, Olympic gold medalist in wrestling. Absolutely starched him in the first round like it was nothing. And Cejudo, I want to say, at least engaged in some grappling exchanges there. He was going for it. Demetrius pulled a Negan and shut that shit down real fast. Spoiler alert. He shut that shit down, hit him with the elbows, the knees. I don't even remember what he hit him with. I don't think Cejudo remembers either. That was devastation. That was a man who had won the gold medal in Olympics, in the Olympic wrestling games. Victories like that.
Look no further than the record of Joseph Benavidez, who is a masterful fucking fighter, and he is 24
and 35.
24, yeah, he's 24-0 against people not named Dominic Cruz or Demetrius Johnson. Against either of those guys, he's 0-2, so he's 24-4. But I mean, just dispatches everyone. And I'm looking at all these fights. None of these are really close fights. They're all pretty one-sided decisions, or like, you know, the aforementioned Tim Elliott. He guillotine choked at UFC 172. I mean, he runs through everyone, and Demetrius Johnson KO'd him in 2 minutes when they fought last 3 years ago. And honestly, I think Benavidez is going to be one of those three title defenses. If Johnson beats Elliott or whoever wins Tough, I think you do the trilogy with Benavidez and then do one more to get him to 11, which three title defenses is like 90% of title reigns don't go three defenses. I don't think the heavyweight title has ever been defended three times. Pins, you know, that was a historic reign he had at lightweight. He had three title defenses. Like, you know, once you get to five, you're talking like historic reigns. I think Chuck had four. Like, so getting three isn't a cakewalk, but if Johnson can get three more, get to 11, he's got to be the greatest of all time. And I guess I'm going to be relegated to saying it every episode now. All I want to see is Dominic Cruz against Demetrius Johnson. And once I see that fight, I can die fucking happy. Wow, we got on a weird tangent going from Gegard Mousasi to Anderson Silva to Demetrius Johnson here. A long tangent, but we'll wheel it all the way back. Anything else on Gegard versus Hall or UFC Fight Night 99 before we flip into the triple digits, talk about UFC Fight Night 100?
Nah, man, let's talk about UFN 100.
UFN 100. It was in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And like I mentioned, the prelims all went as we expected them to. Winners, we saw Cesar Fajeda, Johnny Eduardo, Pedro Munoz with a win, a guillotine choke over Justin Scoggins. I wasn't really necessarily expecting, but the main card wins by Thomas Almeida, Claudia Gadelha, Christophe Jacquot, Kamaru Usman, and Sergio Moraes, all by decision except for the second round TKO by none other than the young bantamweight Thomas Almeida. What did you make of those fights? I didn't catch most of it live, honestly. I went back and I watched some highlights, the knockouts by knockouts by Thomas Almeida, and I hope I pronounce his name right, Gadzimirad Antigulov. Excellent. That was a sub by Antigulov over Marcos Rogério de Lima. And Johnny Eduardo was the other finish I was thinking of, beating Manny Gamperian, who I'm hearing that might be his final fight, which, struggled, never really made it to the top, but to be around for as long as he was, and he's been around for a while now, that's, even though he never challenged for a title or anything like that, he definitely had a great career to have stayed afloat as long as he did in the UFC. Disappointing performance by Justin Scoggins there on the Fight Pass prelims. What did you make of all the fights leading up to the main event?
Well, I'm with you about the Scoggins fight. Now, the only thing, of course, I can't fault him too much. Pedro Munoz is a scrapper at 135 pounds there, but I was wondering what Scoggins was doing at 135 pounds, because he is normally a flyweight, and I had always liked him at 125 pounds. I thought, his skill set lended to at least having some, a solid chance. Still a young mixed martial artist as it is. He's only 24 years old. So,
Think he, after having trouble making weight against Ian McCall, because I think he pulled out of his last two fights. He was going to fight Ben Wynn at UFC Fight Night 85, and then was going to fight Uncle Creepy at UFC 201, and Scoggins pulled out because he said he wasn't going to make weight, and that he was moving up to 135 full time.
Oh boy! Well, this not the biggest debut. Again, though, that's a tough draw for making his bantamweight debut over here. He had a good two-fight winning streak in the 125-pound weight class.
Fire trucks are coming. The takes are too hot, brother.
Too hot, bro. Too hot. Ray Borg and Josh Sampo, some good wins in the flyweight division. It's too bad he couldn't keep it there, but, still 24 years old. This is a guy, not even developing the man strength yet. So, still has a lot of room to grow. He's got a great skill set. He's with a great team. Hopefully he can rebound and see some success at 135 pounds. Johnny Eduardo, yeah, certainly no surprise there. I had Johnny Eduardo by TKO all day and all night, and he got that rather handily. Manny did challenge for a title, but it was in WEC against Jose Aldo. That did not go...
I forgot about that. Yeah,
that was WEC Aldo. That was violent. Manny Gamperian was face down and unconscious at the conclusion of that fight.
That was flying knee KO you in 8 seconds, Jose Aldo.
That was that guy. And actually prior to that, he did challenge Nate Diaz for in the it was the Tough Five finale. And then he was looking pretty decent in that fight until it looked like he had like a shoulder injury, something like that. Everybody was saying, oh,
yeah, he was nagged by a bad shoulder his entire career. And that fight especially it stood out.
Oh, yeah. And that fight, you know, a lot of people, oh, man, he was going to beat Nate. He was going to beat Nate. And, you know, he was looking good in that fight, too. But, yeah, the shoulder gave out and, you know, Nate took advantage of that. But, you know, hey, we've seen where Nate's career has gone after that. And, you know, maybe it was a good part due to the shoulder, like you mentioned. I mean, that's just something that's been with him his whole career. That was a fight that was almost a decade ago now, if not maybe even longer than that. His fight in the Tough Five finale with Nate Diaz. But, you know, he was a solid contender, 135, 145 pounds, and heavy hands. And, you know, he provided a lot of entertainment to the fans over the years. So it'll be interesting to see if he does stick to being retired. I mean, he retired in ring. You know, so we'll have to see if that was just an emotional decision or if this was something that's been on him for a while. Unfortunate to see him retire, but, you know, hey, if it's time, it's time. But, yeah, as you mentioned, again, this was another fight. Pretty much everything went as we had foreseen. You know, Thomas Almeida defeating Albert Morales by TKO. No shocker there, Almeida getting the TKO over the unknown guy. Claudia Gadea getting the UD over Courtney Casey. Actually, you know what? Maybe a little bit surprised that Christophe Jaco was able to get a UD over Talos Latis. That was a good performance from the Norwegian Jaco. Or I'm sorry, he's from Poland. The Polish mixed martial artist Jaco. Very solid victory for him at 185 over the well seasoned former title contender Talos Latis.
It's going to be like my turkey tomorrow evening. Well seasoned. Moving on to the main event, Ryan Bader against Little Nog. Did you catch these fights live when as they went down?
You know, these particular fights, sadly, I did not. I caught the Fight Night 99 card live. Well, I caught the majority of this card live as well. I caught the majority of
you catch both the of them. The end, the Bader Little Nog fight live?
Not live. I did. Okay. I did have to catch a replay
because that was about 8:15 Pacific. I want to say 11:15 over here on the East Coast, and it was crazy because we had three main events all going at once. I believe as Bendo Chandler was going into the fifth round, Bader Little Nog was going into the third round, and Kovalev Ward was going into the eighth round. I mean, all of them were going on at the same time. I chose to watch Chandler Bendo. And after I watched the other two fights on replay, I decided that I made the right choice because Chandler Bendo was a much more entertaining fight than Bader Little Nog or Kovalev Ward, for that matter. Bader kind of did what we thought he would do, dominated the fight. Little Nog had little to no response for Bader's double legs. And Bader was beaten on him until, came close to stopping the fight before that, but ended up getting the stoppage about 4 minutes into the third round. Do you have anything on the fight before we talk about what is next for Bader? Because honestly, kind of a snooze fest.
Well, I must say, I found this one to actually be a little more entertaining than their first encounter.
Yeah,
I feel like their first encounter was just Ryan Bader. I mean, again, this was definitely a wrestling heavy victory, but he ended up getting the TKO based on the ground and pound and you know, his work he was doing. He was starting off much more on the feet, you know, using some combinations to open up the wrestling and the takedown attempts and stuff like that. Actually, looked like he got clipped just a bit by Lil Nog in the first round. I don't know if he was seriously hurt, but potentially had his bell rung a little bit. But I was able to come back, get the takedown. Really, from the first round, worked that heavy ground and pound, busting him up by the end of the first round. And that was basically all she wrote. Second round, you know, basically more of the same. Put together two combinations and then just groundwork, ground and pound for the entire match. It was a little bit more impressive for me from Ryan Bader just because, you know, even though Nog has gotten older, I mean, they've both gotten older, he was able to get the finish. It wasn't just, you know, that first match was just desperate shots. Well, I shouldn't even say that because they were successful, but it was basically just laying prey the entire time, not a whole lot of action. And this was a little more emphatic. In spite of taking some damage, was able to put the ground and pound, get the finish. So better than their first fight.
Yeah, as far as what's next for Bader, you know, this kind of puts him in a weird spot like Gegard, where you have your obvious next in line in Rumble Johnson. Is Glover ahead of him? You know, Glover beat him back a few years ago, and currently, oh no, he just lost to Rumble UFC 202. That's right. Currently in the rankings, the only ones above him are Cormier, Rumble, who will fight for the title next at UFC 206, and Alexander Gustafsson, who was actually originally supposed to fight Nog before Bader replaced him. It was revealed he sustained a back injury, which was going to sideline him indefinitely. If Alex can come back, I would love a fight between Bader and Gus to fight the winner of DC and Rumble for the title. You know, John Jones, I guess, is going to be out until his retroactive suspension ends, like, what, next June or something? I know it's next year, either in the summer or later on next year.
Yeah, I believe it is next June.
Yeah, June 6th or 7th.
I'll have to dig that up.
I think it was I know it was a suspension retroactive to the test that he failed on June 6th. I'm looking at his thing now. So he will be eligible to return July 9th, 2017. And then they stripped him of his interim title, making him the first fighter in UFC history to be stripped of a title twice. Way to go, John Jones.
Wow.
So, yeah. So Glover coming off a loss to Johnson. Sorry.
No. I was going to say, I wonder if there have been other interim champions stripped of the title too, because that's also quite the dubious distinction. Stripped of his interim belts.
Good job, John. So yeah, I'm saying Bader, maybe Bader versus Gus next. And if Gus can't return, Glover just lost. So let's see that grudge match between Bader and DC, even though they haven't fought before. It's a grudge match because they've definitely jawed at each other quite a bit. And I'm sure would jaw at each other quite a bit to sell a fight. You got anything else on this card? UFC Fight Night 100, Bader versus Rogério Nogueira?
Nah, big dog. I think that matchmaking is on point, though. As I was watching that fight, I was thinking, man, what's Gustafsson up to these days? We gotta get him and Bader in there. They haven't tussled it up yet.
Tussle.
A little tussle.
That word, tussle. That brings us to the Bellator 165 card. As forementioned, all the people we know and have heard of pretty much won. Sarah D'Elio only got paid $15,000 in a dark bout against Jameline Nevera, which she won via second round armbar. This is the same Sarah D'Elio who defeated the current UFC champion, Amanda Nunes. And she's now getting paid $15,000 a fight. MMA is a cruel mistress.
$15,000 or $1,500?
I think she got paid $15,000, which still is...
Okay.
Actually,
we're talking
may have
Bellator
been,
now. That could be $1,500.
Yeah, that actually may have been... Here, let me... Let me look that up while you talk about the Bellator 165 prelims.
I don't know. You know, Bellator, they've got that sponsorship opportunity, but say what
yes,
you
that's
will.
What I meant. 1,500 to 15 show and to win. 1,500. Yeah, that's
three
what
grand.
I meant.
It's yeah. No, that's
and her opponent made 1,500.
Oh man, yeah, it's fantastic. No, as far as the prelims go, I mean, like you mentioned, pretty much everything just went as we thought it would. There was a ton of fights. There were 17 fights altogether. Lots of dark matches. Jeez, I don't even know. Basically, everybody we heard of had won. I was a little surprised. Linton Vassell had got a victory over Francis Carmon. Carmon was at one point doing some good things in the UFC. But, yeah, I don't know. Really, really the big payoff was the main and co-main for this card.
And the co-main, we call it a payout, but, man, this was the worst showing in Michael Venom Page's career. Yes, he got the win. He still has not lost. He's 12-0. But in a career, just, I mean, everywhere you look, you have first-round finishes and amazing KOs and him cracking people's skulls open and throwing pokeballs at them and toehold subs and rear naked chokes and doctor stoppages and crazy elbows and demolishing fucking hammer punches and amazing kicks and flying knees. This was, I mean, in a career that very much has mirrored Anderson Silva's, except for instead of fighting for titles in the UFC, he was crushing cans in Bellator's. This was Michael Page's UFC 112 Silva versus Maya, where Anderson Silva did nothing but go out and dance and run away, and Maya / Fernando Gonzalez was unable to cut off the cage, and Silva just kind of toyed around and got the decision he earned, because he did technically win that fight, but it was a fight that left people booing and left people very unhappy, and I'm sure Scott Coker will be in Michael Page's ear, very similar to the way that Dana White was in Anderson Silva's ear afterwards, which is, don't go out there and make a fucking fool of yourself ever again like that. That's fucking stupid. So I'm sure Page will learn from this, but yeah, terrible fight. I love that one of the judges scored it to Fernando Gonzalez, because that 10 seconds where you know it's a split decision but don't know who won the fight, that was a fun bit of drama there. But, yeah.
Oh, man. No, you're right. This was that was a very disappointing performance. And really, a lot of people, man, Michael Venom Page, honestly, forget all the UFC washouts that they're signing. I shouldn't even say washouts, because now at this point they're actually getting some guys who aren't just being forced out of the UFC. They're getting guys who are jumping ship, free agent status. But be that as it may, Michael Venom Page is quite possibly the biggest draw that they have there. Everybody is looking to see, at least everybody who's into mixed martial arts, is looking at Michael Venom Page like, man, what can this young guy do? Where is he going to go from here? He just looks like one of those guys, as you mentioned, through the performances he's put on in the past. You expect him to come out there and just hit a whirlwind kick and internally decapitate someone and just win the fight by manslaughter, something like that. It just, there shouldn't even be an opportunity for the other guy. And this a very apt comparison on your point, Jake, that this was Michael Page's UFC 112, just not an engaging fight. One of those fights where, I mean, he just came off. And you got to wonder, I mean, maybe could it be because he just literally caved in a man's skull in his last fight? Could that potentially have some repercussion where, you know, normally we see a fighter.
I never thought of that, but that's interesting.
I mean, come on now. We always say, you know, fighters coming off the TKO loss are, you know, we see it a lot, more tentative. You know, they come in with a smarter game plan. You know, they're not just going in there biting on the mouthpiece and brawling it out. They're really coming with a tactical game plan. Could it be that Michael Page, after literally caving in a man's skull, is fighting a little different, and perhaps this is like an effect of some sort of remorse setting in to where he wants to win, but he doesn't really want to hurt his opponent like that, which I think is, you know, that's commendable, and that's a mixed martial arts spirit, or at least the martial arts spirit, I should say. As far as the mixed martial arts spirit, I don't know about that, but me as a fan, and, you know, coming from a background of growing up in traditional martial arts, it's one thing, you want to see an exciting fight, a good finish, but you never want to see a fighter irreparably hurt or damaged or handicapped in such a way. And it doesn't appear that Cyborg will be, well, at least handicapped in any kind of way. He should, you know, maybe not go back to the most active athletic life, at least, you know, who knows if he'll be back into MMA, but still, just no one wants to literally cave in another person's skull, at least a martial artist. That's really not what you want to do. So who knows? I'm wondering if there was some tentativeness from his last outing.
And that brings us to the main event, Michael Chandler versus Benson Henderson. Potential fight of the year. I mean, this was as much as you want from a fight, back and forth. I also scored it. Did I score this? Yeah, I think I scored this 48-46 Chandler. I think I gave round one a 10-8 to Chandler, because he was just bulldogging and, I mean, just chasing Bendo down for the finish. I think I scored the first round 10-8 Chandler. Second round, Bendo roars back and wins. Third round, I gave to Chandler. Fourth round, I gave to Chandler. And then fifth round, we get another rally from Bendo. But it wasn't enough, as Chandler took rounds 1, 3, and 4 pretty convincingly in my eyes. Rounds 2 and rounds 5 going to Bendo. I saw a couple people saying round 5 was a 10-8 Bendo, which, yes, it was a one-sided round, but not nearly as one-sided as round 1 was. So I gave round 1 the 10-8 and not round 5. Even if I had scored round 5 at 10-8, it's still 3-2 Chandler, and that would have made it 47-46 instead of 48-46, which was the way that I scored it. How did you score it, and what did you think of this back and forth? I mean, you know, this is one of those fights that you want to show a MMA rookie, you know, if they're trying to get into the sport, because not only was it back and forth and had a, you know, high exciting pace, but we saw all of MMA. You know, we saw wrestling, we saw striking, we saw jiu-jitsu. It was a very fun scrap.
Yeah, it certainly was. And Michael Chandler, he really brought the fight to Benson. As far as how I scored it, I mean, 6-1, half dozen of the other, as the old saying goes. Really, if you want to call it a 48-47 or 47-46, either way, I still think, like you, Jake, I've got 1, 3, and 4 for Chandler, and 2 and 5 for Bendo. And I think, really, if you want to call round 5 a 10-8 for Bendo, I'm giving Chandler a 10-8 for round 1 as well. I thought it was a fantastic scrap, really. I'm a much bigger fan of Michael Chandler than I am of Benson Henderson. Benson Henderson is a fantastic mixed martial artist, but for some reason, no! I love me
black slash Korean people,
Polynesian, no, that's right, Korean, absolutely love them all. You know, individually, in mixed fashion, you know, I'm not a judgmental type of guy. I'm a mutt myself. You know, what do you want? The fuck do these people want, Jake? You know, hey, But really, just as far as mixed martial arts style is concerned, I feel like Benson Henderson has been in some of the most exciting fights that there's been, but I feel like it's mostly due to the other fighters he's fighting, his fights with Donald Cerrone, his fights with Anthony Pettis. Cerrone and Pettis are two of the more exciting fighters that we've ever seen. Great striking styles, also great everywhere the fight goes, on the feet, on the ground, and Benson is as well. That's why you see him mixing it up like that. But Benson is the decisionator. He is the 155-pound GSP, except for he didn't have that exciting streak of finishing people before his rise to fame. It's just always kind of been that way. Yes, he had the scraps with Donald Cerrone years ago. His UFC run. Go back and look at that UFC run. Tell me how boring was every single fight along the way. And I had Chandler in this fight to win. He presses the action just a little bit more. He's very aggressive. He's got the heavy hands. He's great everywhere the fight goes. Benson certainly is one of the best 155 pounders in mixed martial arts. He absolutely has to be. I don't think that that's being debated by anybody. But for me, myself, style-wise, just not my favorite style. It's a rare day. You see a finish from Benson, and for me, it's a rare time that I'm entertained. This happened to be one of those times, because he was getting that fight put to him. And I think the correct decision was made. And I think you're also correct, Jake, that this was definitely to be watching live and have your pick of the three. This definitely was the correct choice. You got to go with this one. I mean, over Ward Kovalev and a rematch with Bader and Nogueira, Chandler Benson, that was something new and exciting.
And I wanted actually to talk Benson. I don't know what's next for him. You know, he said earlier this year that he was going to join the military reserves when he was 33, because that was like the latest year you could sign up for it, and it's something he's always wanted to do and wanted to give back and do his civic duty, etc. And you have to join when you're 33 maximum. And he actually joked, I think it was an interview with Helwani, and he joked, now that means I can be 33 in 11 months. I don't have to join on my 33rd birthday, which I believe he turned 33 just last week. So, he also did say that he was speaking to a recruiter and that he would be able to keep fighting along with a career in the military reserves. So, I don't know how that'll work out, but that seems to be his plan. And, you know, this I believe was his second fight in Bellator. He's now 0-2, or did he get, no, this is his third fight. Yeah, he got that fight against Pitbull Friere to earn the chance to fight Chandler, but now has fought for the welterweight and lightweight straps in Bellator, lost both fights. I assume he'll stay in lightweight. Doesn't seem like he has any issues making that weight. And we will see who's next for him and if he's able to work his way back up to a title shot. But it will be a while now that he's been given two in the same calendar year and lost both challenges. For Michael Chandler, I don't think many people really keep themselves updated with the Bellator lightweight rankings. But Chandler, you know, he's got a streaky career. He went like 12-0, then lost three in a row. Now he's on a 3 or 4 fight winning streak. Who he'll fight next, I have no idea, but I'm sure we will hear soon from Coker and Bellator. You have anything else on that card before we move on?
I think you put a bow on it nicely, my man.
All right, let's go to the news. As far as the news goes, pretty much dominated by Khabib Nurmagomedov. I mean, his legions of fans are taking over, like, Dana's Instagram and Joe Rogan's Instagram and posting hashtag Team Khabib and hashtag Khabib time everywhere you look. Khabib apparently sent Connor a DM today, which I'll read with a broken Russian accent. Connor, you're the champion now. You need to fight with me. If you run every time you look in the mirror, you're not going to respect yourself. Your kids not going to respect you. Your friends, your family won't respect you. Die like samurai. Don't chicken out, please. I know I'm bad matchup for you, but the champion and you need to fight the best. It's okay. Die like Irish warrior. Don't run like chicken. Irish people have history and fight for a long time. You need to represent your people. So strong words from Khabib, who apparently was really jockeying bad for the fight against Connor. Connor, as reported by Dana White, and posted by Damon Martin on FoxSports.com, Connor apparently isn't going to fight until May 2017. His first child will be born in May. Connor will not be fighting until after May, whether he fights in the summer. I would assume, honestly, hearing that, July jumped in my brain, because he said after May. 6 week training camp means maybe the baby's born, he's around for a few weeks, and he'll probably want to get the fuck away after that thing's crying in his face for 3 or 4 weeks. No, but seriously, you know, the money time to fight is that July 4th card. That's usually when they do International Fight Week. They get a ton of folks in Vegas and really try and put on a big event. I'm sure Connor will be training through all of this and a 6 week fight camp to make to lead up to a July fight would make a lot of sense. But yeah, Dana White confirming the Irishman will be out for several months, which brings us back to Khabib, who really wants to fight Connor for the lightweight belt. It leaves out Aldo, which is a topic we've talked about a bunch on the show in the last weeks, and I don't want to beat it to death. But it seems like Khabib Nurmagomedov is now happy with a potential fight against Tony Ferguson today, going on a Russian talk show and saying that that's probably the fight that's going to happen next. What do you think about that, Khabib versus Tony? That's that is a fight. I don't care. I don't care what is going on that night. Plans are getting canceled, and I'm watching Ferguson versus Nurmagomedov.
Oh, 100%. That's a lot of people going to have sick grandmas that day. A lot of people not going to be showing up to work. That fight will be lit if that fight happens. And, you know, I hate to say it, but really, even if Connor weren't taking the time out for this whole pregnancy thing, which I think, come on, bro, you can squeeze in a little title defense before that kid pops out. But that's neither here nor there. He's taking the time. I guess that's how it's going to be. He needs to defend that featherweight belt. Khabib needs to slow down.
Yeah, seriously.
Jose Aldo is the originator of the pitching a bitch and crying, wanting to fight Connor super bad and needing that title shot. Everybody, my God, it's really exactly like Connor said. All these guys are just all on the jock. They all want to fight him. They know that's where their bread is going to get buttered. Everybody, Tyron Woodley, the 170-pound champ, is like, I don't know. You guys want to see me fight Conor McGregor? I mean, I can fight Woodley again, but I don't know. I heard you guys were talking like you wanted to see me fight Conor. You want to see me do that? You know, my goodness, it's that's got to be a huge advantage for him just going into any fight. These guys really do seem to be just at his mercy. It is his and his alone, his will, his schedule, and everybody else is playing by it. It's quite quite amazing. But be that as it may, I think his first plan of action when he gets back is whenever that is, needs to be defending that 145-pound belt, whoever it's against. At this point, I don't even really care if it's Aldo. I just want to see that belt defended one time, just one time. Let's see if he can do that For me, that's number one. And then let's see how that plays out. Move forward to 155. I mean, he won that belt a couple weeks ago. You know, he hasn't been holding up two divisions for that long. He has been holding up the featherweight division for almost a year now. It's been almost a year since he won that unanimous belt. So it's getting to be about that time. We need to see that defense. Habib can shut the yap for a bit, quiet down the street team, call off call off the hooligans, and get ready for that fight with Tony Ferguson. I hate prospect killing matchups, but at this point, these guys literally have nobody else to fight. Habib's on like an 8-fight streak. Ferguson's on like a 9-fight streak, 10-fight streak. I can't even keep track of these guys' streaks anymore. It's going to be a fantastic scrap. I don't even want to predict that. It should be insane, though, that's for sure.
For sure, man. And you have Aldo, who has the interim belt. Max Holloway calling him a pussy for some reason, even though he's going to fight Tony Pettis, I think, pretty soon here. December 10th, I think, is when they're going to fight each other. Speaking of another upcoming fight, Fedor versus Matt Mitrione made official. We actually reported this 3 weeks ago via, I think it was Dwayne Finley in Flow Combat, who originally reported on Fedor versus Matt Mitrione. But that's official for February 18th in San Jose. Which should be fun. Apparently, Mitrione didn't even know he was fighting till it was announced on Bellator. But I don't know. Maybe it was a wise move by Coker to not tell Matt Mitrione so he wouldn't spoil it. Who knows? You have any more news? That's all the news. It was a slow news week, so to speak. I got really nothing before we talk about this coming Sunday's card and then put a bow on it.
Yeah, no, I believe that's about it. Really nothing groundbreaking. Thiago Alves was suspended 3 months for his weight miss at UFC 205. That was recently announced. It seems kind of an arbitrary suspension just because it's very rare that fighters fight quicker than 3 months, especially anybody who knows Thiago Alves.
And Kelvin got benched 6 months for not showing, right?
I believe so. Romero was suspended 60 days by the New York Athletic Commission, New York State
for
Athletic Commission.
Busting Chris Weidman's head open too nasty.
Beat dead ass too bad. A 60-day suspension. Actually, for jumping out of the cage after
Chris
Weidman.
That's right. He did
yes,
that.
Yes. So, yeah, there was a few, few slaps on the wrist going around there. But, nothing earth-shaking. No earth-shaking announcements. Not like Fedor versus Mitrione. I mean, that's certainly it.
Yeah. That brings us to this Sunday's card from Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne, Australia. Sunday, November 27th. And it is an Australia card. So let me look up the time for you because I'm sure it's going to have a weird time. No, actually, it has a U.S.-friendly time. So I'm sure the people watching it in Australia are pissed off. But the early prelims will start 6:30 Eastern, and the main card kicks off at 10 p.m. Eastern, which I don't think is that bad. I think it's like 10 a.m. for them about. But a morning card for the Aussies over there in Melbourne. Anything stand out to you? We'll talk about the main event. But I'm looking forward to the match, the co-main of Jake Matthews and Andrew Holbrook. We're also going to see Kyle Noak versus Omari Akhmadov, which Akhmadov was one of the more promising names of 2015. And then slipped up a little bit, lost two in a row to Sergio Moraes and Elizu Santos. Santos looking to get back in the driver's seat. The Korean Sohee Ham fighting Danielle Taylor. Chris Camozzi versus Dan Kelly. John Tuck, Damian Brown. Ben Wynn versus Gene Herrera. Not the thickest card. Not the most stacked card I've seen in my entire life. But a lot of fights that should be fun going down. Best fight odds. A lot of fights that are close. As far as Vegas sees it, so we'll probably have a lot of close, exciting fights. You know, I don't think we're going to have a lot of one-sided beatdowns here, including the main event where Derek Brunson's only minus 140. Anything stand out to you aside from that middleweight main event?
In a word, not really. It's as I look over this card, there is no notable fight or really no meaningful fight other than the main event, Robert Whittaker versus Derek Brunson. I hate to say it, but that really is what it is. From my estimation, just glancing over the card, hardly a meaningful or ranked fighter to be seen for the UFC Fight Pass preliminary portion. Dan Hooker versus Jason Knight is the featured prelim bout. Who versus who? I'm just kidding. Dan Hooker, he's been in some pretty exciting fights, win, lose, or draw. Really, just the name factor is not there for this one. But as I always say, I'm not going to discount this one immediately because oftentimes you get some of the best action. These guys, they're looking to, they're looking to get a Wikipedia page if they win this fight. You know, that's really what this is about. This is
the winner gets a Wikipedia page.
The winner gets a Wikipedia page. You know, then you can start fighting for rankings, for titles, things like that. This is just to get on that wiki map, son.
That's hilarious.
And they're going to be going hard. They're going to be going hard. You know, down under, man. They like to potty hot, but they like to play hot too. And wait, that's the same thing. Party and play hard. They like to fight hard too. I'm sure that's they're intense. They're going to be intense. Should be some good fights. Not the most for name value, but certainly hoping we see some violent finishes, if nothing else.
Yeah, and speaking of violent finishes, that's what we've seen from both guys on this main event. It's not Sunday night. It's going to be Saturday night for us, but Sunday morning and afternoon for the Australians. All right, because I saw a poster that said 27th Sunday, but I guess that's a poster they drew up for the Australians. So for us in America, and if you're not in America, disregard what I'm saying, but for the U.S., for the East Coast specifically, it will be Saturday night. Prelims on Fox Sports 1 starting at 8, the main card starting at 10. And like I said, Robert Whittaker and Derek Brunson, just both a couple of savages, both on 5-fight winning streaks. Robert Whittaker, after losing to Wonderboy Thompson, beat Mike Biggie Rhodes, then moved up to middleweight and won 4 more fights, finishing Clint Hester, Brad Tavares, earning decisions against Yaria Hall and Rafael Natal. Derek Brunson, on the other hand, after getting TKO'd by the current number one contender at middleweight, Yoel Romero, has won 5 in a row, got a unanimous decision on Lorenz Larkin, and since then has TKO'd everyone in the first round. Ed Herman, Sam Alvey, Juan Carnero, and Yaria Hall, all first round TKOs. Heavy, heavy hands coming from Derek Brunson, looking to get his third win of 2016. Brunson a slight favorite here, but I am going with him. This is tough, and you know, I can see either guy taking it, but both these guys like to walk forward, and you don't see either one really, you know, backtracking much. So I think this is just going to come down to who hits harder. And as much as a soldier as Whittaker is, and as you know, he's definitely probably got the bigger toolbox to work with. Derek Brunson just throws heavy, and I have him getting another first-round TKO. Honestly, the winner of this fight probably gets himself up into that Weidman, Gegard range of middleweights. I mean, this is a big fight. Both of these dudes are, let's see, Brunson's 32. I think Whitaker's like 25 or something. Yeah. Which, all these guys pretty young. 32 isn't that old. Gegard's only 31, which he's been around so long, you'd think he's older, but, the guy just started out super, super young. Who do you have between Robert the Reaper Whitaker and Derek Brunson?
Boy, this is a great scrap and a real, real close one to call. Both are on great win streaks, both 5-0 in the 185-pound division. Great to see Whitaker getting some success. You know, he came up after a TKO loss at 170 to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and has just looked better. Maybe, you know, the weight cut was taking a little bit too much out of him at 170 pounds, but his chin has been holding up well. The power has certainly been there. We've seen him, with his devastating TKO over Clint Hester, knocking out Brad Tavares, and he's also shown some good cardio. Wins over Rafael Natal, Uriah Hall, Mike Rhodes. He's really got a solid solid streak under him. He's really heading in the right direction. Derek Brunson himself, though, man, he's always been towards the top. I mean, his fight against Yoel Romero, he was absolutely winning that fight before getting knocked out in the third round. That was just a brutal loss. Brutal setback there for Derek, but since then, speaking of a guy that's come out just stronger than ever, four TKOs in a row in his last four fights, five wins in a row. He's 5-0 in his last five fights, TKOing Ed Herman, Alvey. I mean, just he's really putting it all together. And as we saw in his fight with Yoel Romero, he was even able to out-grapple Yoel. Until Yoel hit the big Hail Mary. So he definitely has a deep toolbox himself. He's really good everywhere it goes. I think Vegas has it right, having him a slight favorite in this one. Oh, man, I like Whitaker just a little bit better in the pocket exchanges. I think he's a little bit more comfortable standing in there and fighting in the phone booth, as it were. But I don't think that's going to be Brunson's game. Brunson, he's a good striker himself, obviously. Again, four TKOs in a row. And he's really great at using the distance, using that explosiveness. And I think that's what we're going to see in this fight. I don't really think it would be wise for him to stand in the pocket, trade with Robert Whitaker, and I don't think that's what we're going to get. I think he's going to try and use the distance, try and mix it up from the outside. Hit him with some long shots and mix in the grappling in there as well. And I think I have to go with Derek Brunson myself. If not for the unanimous decision, then for I'd say like maybe a I'm thinking a late submission here, maybe like a fourth round sub
for Derek Brunson. And unless you have anything else, I think that's about it for me. Thank you for tuning into the MMA podcast. Pat, you got anything for the people before we sign off?
Jake, I've got nothing but unconditional love and respect for the people. Right. We're thankful for the listeners this Thanksgiving week, and hope Jake, you yourself, you're doing the Lord's work here, hosting this thing, producing this thing, putting God the whole damn thing together. God bless us. God bless you, good sir. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Hope everybody has a lovely one, and always a pleasure.
Enjoy the turkey and the gravy, and if you're not in the U.S., have a, you know, buy some fucking turkey anyway and put some gravy on it. because that's the way you got to do it on November 24th.
Cornbread, baby.
Cornbread. Thanks for tuning in. Next week, we'll obviously be breaking down the Whitaker Brunson card, and it'll we'll have two Bellator cards to preview: Dontis versus Warren and Freire versus Campos, 166 and 167, a Friday Saturday pairing, and that Demetrius Johnson card will also be Saturday, December 3rd. We'll also see Benavidez, Cejudo, Allenberger, Masvidal. It'll be a fun card. Thanks for tuning in. We will be back next week. And until then, we gone.
Tune into the MMA podcast every Tuesday night.
Stop the wild style. Always been a foul child. Will I, sucker? I be the coming like Noah.
The MMA podcast, Jake is the host, and since Ramsey's been in a wheelchair, the Aunt Jimmy show has been on the road. I wanna say John Jones is a hoe, so I think that I'll pick up the phone and dial 213-457-3380. We got hot takes on the show. You get blood on your clothes if you're sitting in the front row. I throw on my gi and then I lace the hoops. I'll have Gal lying down 'cause he ain't the truth.